Welcome to Unknown Artist. I'm your host, Nikki Taylor, that Nikki you know. And this week from the archives, I found some recordings of my first band project, Dear Me, at the Rock Pile.
There's a hole.
The audience clapping at the end, which is nice. God, how do I even introduce this? 2012, I was married and 23, so I felt like I had been married forever. And I started playing with Emmanuel McCall. And then we started jamming at this open mic. And this open mic was, it was at Molly Bloom's in Guelph, which isn't there anymore. It's now Sip Club, I think, unless it's changed again. But at the time it was Molly Bloom's. And I think it was Wally Blues before that. It was Molly Bloom's when I got there. Daniel Richard hosted the open mic at Molly Bloom's. And I went to that open mic every week. And sometimes, many times, I was terrible. But I went every week. And I did 3 songs. Until I reached a point where people were okay with me taking more than 3 songs. And pretty soon I was kind of dominating the open mic. I definitely treated it like it was my open mic. I would just come in from the back entrance because I felt like super cool and known. So I would come in from the back alley because I worked at the Red Brick Cafe in Guelph, Ontario, which shares an alley with Molly Bloom's, now Sip Club. And I would work Saturday morning from 7 a.m. until 3:30 p.m. I was exhausted and I was frustrated and I had so much that I wanted to get off my chest. And then I would go straight to the open mic and I would spend the entire rest of Saturday there. And that's where I met Emmanuel McCall, or we like to call him Jake. This nickname predated my knowing him, and it didn't really stick with me. I would call him Jake if I was being like sassy. It was like an alternate personality, an alter ego. So sometimes I called him Jake, but mostly I call him Emmanuel. I think once I tried a Manny and it didn't, or E-Man. I think E-Man's kind of a fun one, but I didn't often use it. Usually just jokingly. And so I met him at that open mic because we had mutual friends who knew me and knew that I went to the open mic and knew him as Jake. And they knew that Jake was a drummer. And so they brought him to the open mic. And I was like, yeah, why don't you just like hop on up? There's drums here. My songs aren't hard. You'll pick them up. It's fine. And my songs aren't really that hard. And you know, I played every week. So if he wasn't comfortable with like, you know, just doing it on the fly, you could definitely listen to me play my songs there. So we started playing together and it happened so quick. It was like, we jammed together for like, I don't know, a few weeks, you know, a few open mics, and we had a really great like musical chemistry going on, and we were just like, we were in sync with each other and we sounded great. We really like held each other up and showed each other off. And it was a really great partnership, and I miss it so much. He lives in California now. What am I supposed to do? I'm not going to go there. Yet. I think there's a lot of things need to change before I could go to California. But it would be cool. Anyways, at this time, we were playing together for maybe a couple months. because I think it was in the fall. And we met probably in the spring around then. And very quickly, people were coming up to us and asking us to do shows. And we didn't even have a name when people asked. When we got our first gig without a name. And so then we were just like, what do we call ourselves? And I don't really remember how I thought of the name Dear Me. Like, I don't really remember what provoked it. Something, I'm sure. We had this recording of our show at the Rock Pile. It was our first show at the Rock Pile. I think we did 2 or 3. And we played this set, and we played it way faster than we normally would have played it. But it turned out pretty well.
I'm like listening back now. I haven't listened to this in a very long time. So it's really bringing me back to a totally different time in my life that I still connect with and I still identify with, but it's just, it's very different. Dear Henry, there was nothing better than nailing a set and nailing this song. And we nailed the song a lot. You know, we were addicted to nailing this song and we did it every time. It was amazing. Well, maybe not every time, but like most times we nailed it. I remember we had a really good show that I thought we really nailed. We played this show in Waterloo, I think. Either Waterloo or Kitchener. Pizza Hut or Taco Bell. I remember we were on the same bill as this band that I don't remember what they were called, but they had just a whole bunch of monster themed songs. And I remember Midnight Human Sandwich, I think, and just a whole bunch of like kind of nonsense-y sort of names. And it was, they were very much like a Halloween band, but I think it was like really early. Like I don't think it was October yet, but I think it maybe it was late summer. And I remember we played Dear Henry, we played this song and just totally nailed it. And Emmanuel did an amazing drum solo, like so well. And I remember afterwards being like, exactly what you did tonight. You need to do this every time. 'Cause it was amazing. Do this all the time. And I pretty much did. I mean, you know, depending on the day, but like pretty much he was like a very reliable drummer. Okay, I think we did one show at the Rock Pile where it was just the three of us, and one show. No, I think Adam was in this. Adam Vaz. He was playing keys at this point. He was a short-term member of Dear Me. It ended up not really gelling. Just musical styles were sometimes compatible, but a lot of the time not really. But right now when I'm listening back, I'm digging it. I'm digging that it's kind of like Game Boy-ish, which later on during this band project, I developed a taste for 8-bit music, but I really hadn't developed that yet. Not really. I think I did listen to some sort of like noise pop bands, the Magnetic Fields. I listened to them a bit. So that was, I kind of hear a bit of that, maybe. I like it.
Do you remember?
Man, this song was such a hard song for me to write, and a hard song for me to perform, and a hard song for me to talk about. This song was about sexual assault. So there was a week in my life where I didn't know where to live. I was having a lot of trouble at home. I was very stressed on a lot of different fronts. I was a teenager. I was really emotional. And I felt like I had to leave home. And I had to do it right then. And the only place that I could go at a moment's notice and stay was my ex-boyfriend's house, who was also still my friend. We started out friends, we dated, and then when we broke up, it was amicable, we were friends. You know, I really trusted this guy. He was the closest person in my life at that point. So I stayed with him. But we had broken up. We weren't dating anymore. I didn't want that anymore. And I don't really want to get into the details, but he sexually assaulted me every day that I was there. And I was there for a week, and it messed me up for years. I mean, I say years, but as far as I can tell, it still messes me up. This song is about me self-soothing despite horrible, horrible experiences. Soothing your own trauma is what this song is about. And I remember that Adam was new to the band. He didn't really know me, and he just wanted to like blend in with the group, and that's, I get it. And I think I was extra sensitive about this because the song means what it means. And he once at practice said, "I love this song. It's so upbeat and happy." And I lost it mentally. I think I kept calm. I'm sure I was shaking in the amount of emotion I was feeling. And it was complicated and multi-layered emotion. But I was feeling it, and I think from that moment on, I didn't want him in the band. But I remember when he said that this song was very happy and upbeat, I pretty much immediately said, "Do you know what this song is about?" And I laid it out there in no uncertain terms that this was not a happy song, and I made it very, very, very clear why. And I don't... I wonder how unnerving that would be to receive. And I'm so sorry if I like was horrific. Adam Vaz, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I was a very emotional person. going through my own stuff. And yeah, so I think from that moment, I was just like, no. Find a reason to not have him in your space. Which was just because I was triggered, that, you know, trauma makes you think all sorts of things and feels ways that don't necessarily make sense. But if you're triggered and it's negative, you know, it's not going to go well. And you, if you're someone who gets triggered a lot, you learn to be in the company of people who don't trigger you. And I've been fortunate enough in my life to be surrounded by people who rarely trigger me. I think I'm becoming less and less triggerable as I work through my trauma. And I think I surround myself with people who learn better. And if they don't know better, they try to. Just keep on trying and getting better as people. It's all you can really hope for. And I surround myself with pretty great people, but not at the beginning. You know, when I was young, I didn't really know what to think of most things. I was very, I didn't have a whole lot of experience, a whole lot of life experience, but it was a very intense time. My parents had divorced, my sisters were in university, I was working as well as doing like a really intense course load. I think I had like all academic level, like, you know, difficult subjects that required a lot of mental effort and study, and then on top of that there's extracurriculars, on top of that there's work, on top of that there's, you know, taking care of your little sister because your mom's working 12-hour shifts, an hour each way commute, and no one else is there, and then on top of that having a lot of emotional trauma to deal with. because I already had a lot of emotional trauma from a lot of different sources. I don't think you could really like pick to one thing and be like, that's the source of my trauma. Like, no, there is a lot. This is a very traumatically structured world, and it's very difficult to live in it. And especially in my first 20 years of life, it was a mixed bag. There was some really good stuff in there, but there was also a lot of really bad stuff in there. I think anything that I've dealt with since has been far better for the most part. I mean, you know, there's definitely some exceptions. I've had some exceptionally bad moments, but, you know, we all do. That's life, you know. You have some exceptionally bad moments, and you have some exceptionally good moments. Performing this song, playing this song, writing this song has healed me of that memory in a lot of ways. And that's why I write a lot of music. And that's one really, really effective way I have of coping with trauma, is putting it into art and seeing what it becomes. Dan or Emmanuel or I would just joke like, we're gonna do a song right now, right now, because we say right now so many times in this whole song, and it's hilarious how many times we say right now in this song. It's very repetitive, and it only works if we really like go full out on it. You know, like you can't do this song, say right now, that many times without escalating it, you know? So I like the bridge. I had to like bring it way like as low down as I could so that I would have somewhere to go so that I could say right now enough times and loud enough that it would be exciting. And sometimes I couldn't. Oh, you know what? When I was at the rock pile, this thing has happened to me a few times throughout my singing career, is I will sing so, I think I open my mouth out like really wide. My mouth is super wide when I'm singing loud, and and I get dust in my throat. I think some dust flew into my throat, and I couldn't quite like finish the way I wanted to on doing right now, doing that last song. I did it, and listening to it back now, I don't think an audience would have been able to tell, but I could tell because it was me, and I knew what I was feeling, and I definitely had some like dust in my throat that made it difficult to continue, but I did. And that happens to me a bunch. It happened to me in the last archival recording, the misprints that I did with Closer. The song Closer totally had some dust fly into my throat in that one. And that, it happens like way more than I ever wanted to. So I always like make sure that I drink lots of water when I'm singing, and lots of liquids. And I don't know, I usually kind of blame the air quality. Like, oh, it's a terrible air in here. I'm getting dust in my throat. But maybe it's just the fact that when you open your mouth really wide and a lot of air is going through, maybe your throat, you know, gets sore. And maybe I should pay attention to my body more. Maybe I shouldn't sing until I can't sing anymore. maybe I should change the way I do things. But I had a lot of fun. Dear Me was a several year project. I think it kind of officially ended. We had like sort of the last show, but I think it would be great to have a reunion, a Dear Me reunion. It would be great.
I've been so impatient lately, trying to get everything clear in my mind. There's a million things I'd like to try.
night. Thanks for checking in to this episode of Unknown Artist. Stay tuned for more
Delving into the Archives.